podcast where the already nomad or aspiring to become one, we're here to supply you with relevant information to help keep you on the road until you get stuck in a Thai island. And this week I'm sending you my regards from Koh Phangan. Koh Phangan is a Thai island of party. Basically, that's the branding of Koh Phangan. Pretty cool place. Parties are not really for me, but with a place with so much nature, you can always find a good spot where you can just stare at the sea for most of the day. And that's exactly what I'm doing. I'm doing a week of disconnection here. So for those of you who are not following, basically I'm doing 1 week of no work every 3 months, which is pretty cool. Sometimes challenging when you have a lot of work and you just have to disconnect, but it's kind of a habit that I'm trying to enforce into myself, and that's pretty cool. So yeah, we have a little bit of waves in the background, not a lot of waves, and some roosters, so should be an interesting recording. I'm here after almost 3 months in Chiang Mai, and I'll just reaffirm that Chiang Mai is a great nomadic destination, great community, great value for your money, and that's why it's probably the most popular destination in the world currently for digital nomad, a great place to start a nomadic lifestyle. In addition to that, I had a few cool habits that I went for in Chiang Mai. I did 15 lessons of Muay Thai, which is Thai boxing, and that was absolutely great. First time I ever thought about the concept of fighting and self-defense and everything like that, so it's pretty liberating and cool. Other than that, I also experimented in intermittent fasting, starting 6 p.m. every day, and now I'm gonna do 4 p.m. every day, which is basically a time where you just stop eating. I also recorded an interview with one of my nomadic heroes, Chris Kirkland, that will be featured hopefully in a few weeks. Over there, Chris talks a lot about the value and benefits of fasting, so we'll cover this in the future. For today's topic, we're going to discuss something that I want to do more often on Become Nomad, which is anything that is related to money. A lot of what we do in Become Nomad has to do with philosophies and hacks and so on, but also the part about the career and generating money is important, and hopefully this will be useful for you. So the topic for today is remote work and digital nomad careers. The idea is that this topic is probably on everyone's mind. It's an important topic. Travel in general has many challenges. A lot of them are emotional. For example, the loneliness, social life, lack of comfort zone, and so on and so on. Roosters in the background when you record a podcast. But in the end, all of those are psychological challenges that each of us confronts in their own way. However, we all have something in common. This something is basically the need to sustain ourselves while having money. This is one of the biggest, let's say, challenges that digital nomads start with. And actually also after starting, the career development is also a major concern that makes people stop this long-term path. So in this article, we'll go over an overview of the main branches of digital nomad's career before. In next episodes, we're going to zoom into each branch. And the idea over here is to receive a macro view of all the possibilities before zooming into each option. The macro view is important because in the end of the day, when you're going to do your roadmap of where you want your career to be and what do you want to transition to, having this roadmap and kind of figuring out clearly the possibilities makes a lot of sense. Probably you're going to have to change a little bit of what I'm talking about to be customized to your own career, let's say, goals and ambitions, but having this overview is pretty helpful. Now, people who embark on this lifestyle usually have two main financial concerns. The first and the basic one is how to afford and have the money to stay on the road for the first few months, which is pretty tactical and easy to address. The second challenge is a lot more strategic and actually a lot more heavy and hard to deal with. And basically it is, how can I avoid the massive long-term hit my career prospects will have when I embark on this lifestyle? For most people, getting the short-term money is doable for actually going for it for a few months, but the long-term is bleak. And that's what makes a lot of people to either give up on the dream of doing this lifestyle on the long term, or they just go backpacking with a clear end date before they go back to their next 9-to-5 job. So the idea of this article is to allow you to build some kind of a long-term plan to make sure that you are not only going through the first few months of travel, but also have a clear plan that might work. By the way, not sure that will work, but might work. It will allow you to sustain yourself on the long term while also seeing your career advance in this time. So it wouldn't be considered as frozen time of, you know, I just did something to sustain myself minimally and that's pretty much it. So over here, we're going to speak a little bit about the possibilities. There is a little bit of evolution process here, and you're the one that decides where do you cut this evolution. You might even cut it on the first step that we're going to introduce, or you might want to transition to other steps, which are not necessarily higher, they're just different. So that's totally up to you. So let's start with the first challenge, the tactical challenge. How do I make enough money to start? Now, this one is relatively easy, especially if you're from the developed world. The initial seed money to start living as a digital nomad is most commonly and easily achieved by a regular 9-to-5 job until you save enough to start. How much is enough? Honestly, I don't know. I would probably answer the idea of enough would take about, especially depending on the first location you're picking, would take about 6 months and multiply them by about $1,500. So that's pretty much a good sum to start with. And the idea over here is that you want to get on the road with an initial seed capital to invest in your development of a career and basically to be in a situation that you don't have an existential threat of running out of money next week. A spoiler alert, if you are going to be in a situation that you're saying to yourself, whoa, in 2 weeks I'm out of money, you're very, very likely to take off and go back home. So you'd never want to be in a situation that you have 2 weeks more of money, because that, first of all, puts you under a lot of pressure, gets the control off of you, and also, at the same time, this pressure is going to make this entire idea of nomadic lifestyle less fun, and you're probably going to stop. Depends on your personality. But the idea is have enough seed capital to always allow you to kind of skate over and be in a situation that you're in a control and not thinking to yourself, okay, what's going to happen next week? You don't want to be there. Now, financial sustainability is an equation of two. How much money do you make and how much do you spend? And that means that it makes a lot of sense when you start to pick the right location. I talked about Chiang Mai in the beginning of this article. This is a perfect location to start on a low budget, because starting living nomadically and experimenting how to make money in places like London or Zurich will probably reduce your oxygen and put extra pressure on you to monetize ASAP. This is pressure that is not necessarily needed in the beginning. It might be needed, by the way, as a side note, later. If you're taking your time too much and you don't progress, actually one of the things that is recommended for some people is just go to an expensive location, and over there you're going to have a lot of pressure to make good money. And for some people it works, but in the beginning, take it easy. You need to experiment a little bit, and that means pick a place that allows you to take advantage of this arbitrage that we've been speaking about. Now moving on to an unfortunate phenomenon, so which is also a little bit surprising. So whatever digital nomad career you choose, or whatever location you end up in, the mindset of working will actually cost you money. So you heard it right. Basically, by deciding that you will be working while traveling, you automatically increase your expenses. What does it mean? It means that, in other words, you just have to forget the backpacker budget, because you're not going to be on a backpacker budget or a hippie that lives on less than $10 a day. And that's, by the way, great. And this is a great period of life that I recommend everyone to do. You know, in the beginning, actually, as a side note, I just met a few digital nomads in Chiang Mai that are 21 and didn't do a backpacking trip. And for me, I was like, why don't you do 1 year of fun backpacking trip and then go back to this digital nomad lifestyle? There is basically a transitioning into something more serious. But it doesn't mean we have to skip the non-serious part. This is probably the most entertaining part there is. So this is just a side note. But going back to the idea of increasing work, your costs of life because you're working, the minute you decide that you work, you have to forget the dream of being a low-cost backpacker. Those guys or girls, they can couch surf. They can avoid co-working spaces. They can totally avoid internet coffee shops. Plunge into uncertainty and play the game of living on as little budget as possible, which is a lot of fun. And they do that by focusing extensive time resources to find best value for everything, probably free. When you decide you work, that's it. It ends there. Your time resource is now very, very valuable, and that creates a new set of expenses to your life. And that means that you can't settle on a slow internet accommodation option. You have to find an accommodation that makes sense on the internet. You need a big data package on your SIM card. If you figure out, like me, maybe that you must have a co-working space, then this is an extra big, big cost. The minimum, you're probably going to go to coffee shops and start working with your laptop over there, because working from home, it can be a little bit or very, very depressing. And you will most certainly need a good night's sleep every day in a stable and certain place. Because if you're in a dorm or doing couchsurfing, you never know the quality of sleep you're going to have. Over here, you kind of need to balance your life, because the idea is that when you have clients or you're working on something, you need to be focused. Your clients will not care about your challenges as you travel, and they shouldn't as well. It's on your concerns. Now, one more thing that you have to take into account while increasing your expenses is that actually when you work most of the day, being on a budget and being very limited in spending money is also very decreasing your motivation, let's say. Because you see all of the people around you having fun during the day, and you're working. And not only that you're working, in the few precious hours that you're not working, you're on a tight budget. It doesn't make any sense. And I saw that basically people work, spend more money, and are more conscious about having fun and spending money in the few hours that they're not working. And it makes a lot of sense. So the idea is that another thing that will increase your expenses as you work is that basically in the few hours that you don't work, and we already talked about the extra expenses that you have because of work, in the few hours that you don't work, you don't want to be on a tight budget. It simply is going to depress you and send you on the next plane home. So the idea over here, working mindset costs money and increases your expenses. Now, before we go over the main branches of digital nomads' careers, let me introduce you to a concept I live by and speak a lot about in my startup lectures. This concept is called the subsidy model. And the idea over here is that basically you need to have a profitable layer to subsidize your current non-profitable career building related activity. So in your example, in the example that you're starting out, let's say, and this thing is always should be on your mind, never mind in what stage you are. So let's say you're just starting out. The idea is that when you are starting out, the first goal in mind is to run as much fast as you can to create this profitable layer. And while doing that, you're using your savings from home, and that means that you don't have a subsidy model. You probably have an asset that keeps on decreasing. The idea is that as a good subsidy model at its best is growing with time, which increases your net worth, or at least not decreasing at the minimum. And that's the situation you want to run to. You want to be in a situation that there is always a layer that funds your next experimental activity that will probably not be profitable for a long time. So work on establishing those layers. Now, what happens with those layers is that basically you're going to see that the more experimental the activity and entrepreneurial the activity that you're picking is, the more it takes more money to build, because the phase of actually building it and also experimenting with it, at minimum, if it doesn't cost money, it's gonna not pay you anything. And the idea over here about the subsidy model is that the lowest your resources are, you want to pick your next activity or career move that has less uncertainty. So for example, if you're in a very, very low savings, or you have a subsidy or a subsidy layer that is very minimal, you probably don't want to start a startup, because startups require a lot of resources. Probably what you want to do in this case, and we're going to discuss the branches soon, is freelancing. So this is because freelancing actually gives you pretty predictable cash flow in some sense, much better than startups do. So the idea is, the more unstable or non-existent your subsidy layer is, the layer that actually is profitable and gives you money for your next activity, the less risk you need to take on your next activity. And this is something that I've done, and I'm going to give an example of my own activities in the end of this episode to kind of get you on track on what I did and how I used this subsidy model. Now, one more consideration coming into mind when deciding on your remote career has to do with your knowledge and your skills. So the idea over here is that the less skills you have and the more new you are to the remote work world, it makes more sense finding an apprentice job or a job remotely, so people can take a risk on you instead of you doing the other way around. The price over here is that you're delaying your entrepreneurial activities for a little bit to get a profitable paid layer of actually learning on other people's money. So the lower your skills and experience are, the more you probably, again, want to choose a branch, and we're going to go over the branches soon, that has less risk and that allows you to learn on other people's money before you plunge into and take a risk. Now, let's introduce the main branches of digital nomads, careers, and jobs. The order here is going to take into account the amount of uncertainty each of those options offer, from lowest to highest. And that means that the more stressed you are for cash, and the less stable your current financial situation is, plus, in parentheses, the less skills and experience you have, it might be better to focus on the less risky career and then climb up the ladder as your situation gets more stable. So without further ado, we're jumping to the first branch of digital nomad and remote work career, which is basically remote worker for one company. Now, over here, this is something that becomes increasingly common and unheard of about 10 or 20 years ago, and now super common, and provides you a smoother transition to become a digital nomad. So the idea over here is that usually the company you're working for, 9 to 5, gives you an option, and you usually have to fight for this option, to work remotely. Or in another scenario that is a bit more difficult, you just find a remote work to begin with. Without even starting a regular 9-to-5 in an office and transition to remote work, you just find the remote work. But the idea is that usually it's going to be a transition from offline work to remote work, in an office to actually being location independent. And the advantage of transitioning to work remotely in the same company you currently work for is that they trust you enough. They know you. So even if it's not such a common concept in their company, since they acknowledge you, your importance to the company, and they trust you, you might be able to negotiate and switch to working remotely. Now, this might involve, and probably will involve, a pay decrease or a downgrade of your position from employee to freelancer, and so on and so on. But the consequence here is still the same. You continue to work, or you start working for a stable company remotely, usually full-time. Now, to get a situation to transition to remote work, you basically want to check the precedents of what happened in the past, how many people actually did it, because you're probably not going to be the first one. Although it's possible that you will be the first one, you're probably not going to be the first one, and you kind of want to see if the company is open-minded to it. And slowly discuss this idea with your bosses. The 4 Hours Work Week book, by the way, discusses a few strategies of doing that. The idea is that companies are now a lot more open-minded to the idea. In some cases, they will even send you home without negotiation. I have a few friends that actually worked in big companies that were basically receiving a letter of, hey, you have to start working from home from now on because we don't have offices. So it's going to become a lot more common and a lot less of a struggle to get there. For most regular people, it's a tragedy being sent home and not having an office. For us, of course, it's a huge opportunity. Now, what I want to say is that if you know that your future goal is to be a digital nomad, it might make sense today to opt for a regular 9-to-5 job with a clear path and possibility to remote work in the future, which is kind of work for a remote tolerant company. So if you're in the phase that you're just preparing for this digital nomad lifestyle, picking the right company so you can actually take the first wave of the nomadic lifestyle with those guys make a lot of sense. Now, let's discuss a little bit the advantages of this branch of basically remote worker for one company only. So the advantages are stable paycheck from a company that you trust. And we're going to speak a little bit about freelancing, and you're going to see that over there nothing is stable, not on the cash flow and not on the collection. One more advantage is no need to spend most of your time marketing to new clients and juggling between different clients. You have only one client, you focus on what you do best, your work. The first advantage is that if you stay as an employee, you can actually keep some of the social benefits you will not have as a freelancer. And that means social security, paid health insurance, pension, and so on and so on. So pretty interesting opportunities here. Now let's discuss the disadvantages. And disadvantages are as following. This kind of work or branch of a career involves a more rigid style of work. set shifts usually, and it can especially be difficult and lower your flexibility if you're in a different time zone. So for example, if you're working for an American client and you're in Asia, it might totally mess up your schedule if you're doing shifts, and then you're probably going to spend most of the night awake and then sleeping during the day, so it can get a little bit complicated. Usually those things allow you low flexibility to disconnect for a period and enjoy uninterrupted travel on your own terms. The idea is that over here you only have the weekends, and if you want to do weeks of disconnection like I do, it can be a little bit difficult to discuss this with your boss. That's another disadvantage. It might also be challenging to maintain your position and career development possibilities in the firms when you're remote and everyone else is together in the office. The idea over here is that we're still social animals. If most of your career, most of your company is in an office together, you're going to be feeling left out a little bit. So the idea is that if the company is not mostly remote, you're going to actually receive a hit on your career. Office politics are still important for advancing your career, and over here you will not be part of this game, which means that on the long term you would probably not have the same possibilities of an upgrade in your job or being promoted to something a little bit more serious, and that's something you take into account. Now, one more disadvantage, and that working for one client and doing one thing can result in low amount of learning, especially if you're dealing only with one core activity. And by not actually doing marketing for your services, you're also decreasing your independent career learning curve. So the idea is that you have all the eggs in one basket and you're kind of working only on one skill, and you're not working in the same time on developing your marketing skills, your personal brand, and so on and so on. It can be a little bit not so good. And the last disadvantage is high dependency on one client. You have all your eggs in one basket, as we said, and with increased financial risk and emotional risk. You have a boss. You're dependent on this boss. This boss pays you 100% of your revenue. It might get a little bit stressed. So summing up, this branch is a very interesting branch. I think it's a great branch to start with, but you saw from the list of disadvantages that basically, slowly, you probably want to transition out of it on the medium long term if you're starting with it. And speaking about transitioning, let's speak about the second branch, which is basically freelancing and agency mode. Now, over here, this kind of resembles the remote work mode for one company, but here you're a freelancer providing services or consulting for several clients in the same time, and usually for a limited fixed amount of time per client, which means that those contracts are ending and you keep on finding new ones. Now, this is a more entrepreneurial path, since it involves marketing your services to new clients and managing few clients in the same time. To be successful in the freelancer mode, you have to realize that you run an entrepreneurial venture, which requires working on your personal brand, building process to increase your efficiency of your service, constantly improve your core skills and process of marketing and the process of providing the service and the process of collecting the money. Now, as you get more and more clients, you might have the possibility to transform to an agency mode by slowly hiring team members and making processes of your entire business. And that means that you can delegate most of your day-to-day activities and have a little bit more freedom as well. Let's talk a little bit about the advantages of the freelancing mode for multiple clients. You're less dependent on one primary client, which means that if a client tells you, hey, we're not working together anymore, it's not the end of the world. You just got a small hit and you continue with finding others. You can potentially increase your prices from project to project, something that is very difficult when you're doing work for only one client. Over here, basically, the more you learn, the more you get skilled, you can charge more. And my own transition in freelancing was exactly that. I started with charging $2.50 an hour. I know it sounds crazy, but I needed the first few jobs. And then basically I went on to building business plans for clients for $2,000 on something that took me about 20 hours or even less per client. So you can really, as you find and discover your main skills and build the processes, you can actually increase your prices as well. Now, one more advantage is that it allows you greater freedom, since some projects have a due date or an end date. And that means that basically what you can potentially do is take a few clients on a fixed term. You know that they all end at the end of the month, and then just take 2 months off, which is something unheard of if you're working for one client. Now, one more advantage is that usually it does not involve a shift or rigid hours, which allows you to have more freedom and flexibility during the day. You're not an employee, you're now just providing services. And the last advantage is that it brings you to scale and to hire a team. You're going to see that the more successful you become, it becomes more sensible to actually hire people to work for you as your client pool grows. And when you have a team, you can delegate a lot, and this basically allows you to disconnect of many of the aspects of the business and putting focus on actually the business itself, instead of working in the business, working on the business. Disadvantages of the freelancing mode is that it's less certain and greatly fluctuating cash flow. Your cash flow over here is not going to be stable. It changes dramatically by the amount of work you're given and also because of collection. This is another disadvantage. You have a problematic client, and you will have a few problematic clients, not only on collection, but also on how you feel working with it. When you work with a lot of clients, it might get a little bit tricky, and in the end, some of them might not pay you as well. So this is a little bit more uncertainty, or a lot more uncertainty than a model of working for one client only. One more disadvantage is that you spend a lot of your time marketing and reaching out to new clients instead of billing for hours. So marketing becomes a big chunk of your time now, and this is not a billable part. It's a part that usually has expenses and is kind of taking you off the focus of doing what you do best. And the last disadvantage is that basically there is no exit or passive income scenario on the freelancing mode, which basically means that when you stop working, the business kind of stops as well. So there is no real possibility of selling the business. So in the end of the day, it's a cash flow operation, and you have to take it into account. And the bottom line is that it's great potential for freedom and growth, but quite volatile ride with ups and downs and a lot of work. So the next branch after discussing the freelancing branch is online business mode. And this model is somewhere between the freelancer mode and the startup mode that we're going to discuss next. The idea over here is that you're not now selling a product, which is, and by that you're disconnecting from providing your own time as a service. Now, unlike freelancing over here, you're working on building a platform. And here the idea is that you pull anonymous users to your platform. Instead of providing your time to your clients, you're pulling anonymous users to your platform, hoping they will buy whatever you offer. Now, the only difference between the business mode and the startup mode, which we're going to discuss next, is the amount of innovation and uncertainty involved. So businesses are here to basically solve known problems with models that already exist. You're not really entrepreneurial in the sense of total innovation, trying something new. And therefore, that's the good thing. It's less uncertain, and you don't need to spend too much time on the discovery mode. It's very interesting. It's 9 o'clock in the morning, and the rooster is everyone in Copagan is kind of waking up very, very late, even the roosters. So a good example of a remote online business is an Amazon e-commerce shop. And basically the idea is that it's not totally entrepreneurial. It's like you're selling a product that you kind of know that exists, that people need, usually a physical product. At some branches of this, you're also going to sell an info product. If you're going for lower risk, you can actually focus on selling info products and doing affiliate marketing, such as blogs and podcasts and so on and so on. But the idea is you're kind of having a business instead of a freelancing mode and having a lot more clients. Most of them you won't even know as they buy stuff from you. So what are the advantages of the online business mode? So over here you have an opportunity to build a business that sells products with a validated demand. Unlike a startup mode, we're going to discuss soon that you're trying to reinvent the world. Over here, you kind of know what you do. You kind of know that other people sell what you sell, and that gives a lot of certainty. Now, over here, another advantage is that you're not the service that you sell. Therefore, you're free to work on your business and not in your business. So the idea is that you're working on the development of your Amazon shop, doing business development, product discovery, and so on and so on, instead of actually providing a service with your time like you do on the freelancing mode. And you can grow fast into a business that sustains you on the long term, which is pretty cool. You disconnect again from your time for a service. The last big advantage is this allows you a potential sale of your business in the long run. Although I have to say that the startup mode actually allows a bigger exit because you're building something new that didn't exist, so it allows you a bigger price when you actually sell. But the online business model also allows you to sell your business. And there are many, many stories of people who have Amazon shops or e-shops that actually sold their business as one unit for a very nice sum. So pretty interesting, this online business mode. What are the disadvantages of the online business? So basically, cash flow is totally uncertain. Other than in the beginning, where it is 100% certain that you will lose money. So the idea over here is that 100% in the beginning, as you build an online business, you're going to have to do investments and you're going to have to spend money. And then after that, it's very uncertain if you're ever going to make the money or not. So you have a big initial investment and you need exactly, I'm going back to the discussion where we started in the beginning. If you're doing an online business, you need a subsidy layer, a profitable layer that kind of allows you to build this online business. For example, being a freelancer while you're also working on an online business. One more disadvantage of the online business career branch, this entrepreneurial branch, is heavy marketing and business skills is usually a must. This goes back to what we discussed. If you are low on skills and experience, you probably want to do it on other people's money, work for them, and then start an online business after you've done some work for another Amazon shop. Because starting your own shop without having any knowledge and marketing experience doesn't make a lot of sense. Why not work a few months for someone else, understand the business, and then basically build one of your own? One more disadvantage, it's gonna probably take you years to reach a level of income that will allow your salary to match the one you would have had as an employee. And this is super, super important. This is not fast money mode. In most cases, it's gonna take you a few months of just putting money in the business, and then a few years, 1 or 2 years, to actually be in a situation that you can pull out a salary. Now, this is important to understand. If you don't understand it when you build an online business, don't start an online business. And again, I'm going back to the idea of subsidy model. You need a profitable layer to fund this losing activity for years. And the last disadvantage for the online business approach is that you have higher chances to shut down than succeeding. So over here, you're in the entrepreneurial land. Although you're not building a startup that is changing the world with a new service or product that doesn't exist, still online businesses have a lot more chances of closing down than succeeding. And you should know the statistics as you start. Moving on to the last branch, which is startup entrepreneur mode. So probably this is the ultimate plunge. We've discussed nomadic entrepreneurship in previous articles, and the idea behind the startup is creating something new in the world that currently doesn't exist in the form that you supply. So this is by far my favorite digital nomad career, but also the most uncertain one and probably most difficult one as well. It has the biggest risks, but at the same time, the biggest potential rewards. So unlike the freelancing mode where you can start right away charging money for your services, startups usually have a phase where you test product and mostly offer them for free to validate them. So the idea over here is that if in the online business mode, you actually had to do a small investment in the beginning to start your business and then you hope that to generate profits, the startup mode is requiring one, an investment in the beginning, plus a big layer of money to test your theories. So it actually requires a little bit more investment. And again, this is why it's the last branch. This is why you wanna probably start a startup only if you have a subsidy layer that allows you to do that, because this one is tough, I have to admit. Now, the idea is, again, to remember that you will have extended periods of time that you will not only be left on the startup mode without a salary, but you will actually have to invest your own money in the startup for 1 year or 2 years continuously, or to raise investment to keep it alive. And this is something that, again, there are no quick wins in this business. Everyone is now an entrepreneur, and the chances are you're going to hit something that generates a lot of money. It could have happened in the time of the 4 hours work week in 2007. Today, it's a lot of hard work and trial and error for a long time. So let's go over the advantages of the startup mode. Basically, it allows you ultimate freedom if it works, usually by selling your business for life-changing amount of money. if it succeeds. The second advantage, which is amazing for me, is creating something new and exciting. You're now a builder, and focus on building a product which solves a real pain in an innovative way instead of just providing a service. So that's a pretty cool thing. And the last advantage is that you sell a product or a service that are scalable, which allows you to kind of disconnect from you as it succeeds and kind of delegate it to people. So having a lot more potential personal freedom than the other branches. But in the beginning, you're going to be a lot more of a slave to this startup mode than the other branches as well. Probably not going to have any free time. So that's jumping onto the disadvantage. This is one of them. The second one is total uncertainty with the chances stacked against you. So if online businesses have about 50% or 40% chances of success, or maybe 30, startups have about 10%. This is the statistics, and you should know it before you start. Now, over here, you need a lot more, another disadvantage, you need a lot more seed money to start in comparison to the other options. Again, it's not only the initial investment that you're making, but also the continuous investment as you're growing your startup and testing out the theories. So make sure you understand this. It's not about getting money, it's about giving money. Another disadvantage is it's a volatile path with many downs and a few ups. So in the startup mode, you just need a few big victories, but most of your time is going to be defeat after defeat for yourself, your business, your ego, and you have to take this into account emotionally. Now let's talk for a second about what I did as I started 8 years ago. So basically I followed the subsidy model without even knowing that it has a name, the subsidy model. I gave it a name. So I started with an online business, which was Lingolearn, an online language school. And Lingolearn was losing money from day one. So I decided not to eat into my savings to cover those losses. So at the same time, I was freelancing, producing business plans for entrepreneurs, mainly on Upwork, which is upwork.com, a good site for freelancers. And the idea over here is that I knew that Lingolearn is going to lose money for an extended period of time. So I said, okay, in this time, let's actually make money from another source so I can back up Lingolearn. And that's where I started to become a VA, translator, and then preparing business plans for clients. So basically the next step after Lingolearn is that when Lingolearn stabilized and kind of generated revenue, it allowed me to shift my attention to a startup, which basically Lingolearn was kind of the subsidy model for the startup, while also doing a little bit of freelancing and then in the end totally ditching the freelancing mode. And now I'm focused on a startup called Startup Link, a global startup ecosystem and research center map. And basically the idea over here is that I transitioned, if I sum it up, my entire transition started as a freelancer to back up my first online business, which is Lingolearn, and then used Lingolearn to back up my second startup, which is Startup Link, which is a lot more technological and uncertain than Lingolearn. So the idea is that basically I always had the subsidy model. And my personal conclusion on digital nomad and remote work careers is that those transitions are difficult. The lifestyle for itself is financially suboptimal, which means that basically while being on the road, you're probably getting a hit of your career. But as we discussed, there are many, many possibilities here to actually being on the road and still build something cool. And if not build something cool, have a lot of clients. And if not have a lot of clients, work for one client and have a lot of freedom. So the idea is that there are countless possibilities here and you just have to pick what makes sense for you. The path itself allows a lot of freedom and it's very fulfilling and very interesting as well. So hopefully this article helped you a little bit to understand the big picture about what are the possibilities and what are usually the transitions that involve each branch and where can you head up next. The idea of here is kind of maybe do your personal roadmap and decide where do you want to stop in this chain or what interests you. And that's basically it for today. Life is short, money is necessary. So you want to get on the road, work hard and play hard. Have a good day.